Petrangelo shoots, save, rebound, score! Nicholas Waugh ties it! Rebound goal for Nick Waugh.
Live from the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com.
A steal for Colasar, charging out. Colasar, the righty, shoots and scores! Colasar on the breakaway.
This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, your home for access with the team, exclusive player interviews, and breaking news from around the National Hockey League. Here are your hosts, Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Welcome in, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, live inside the Findlay Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studios. Findlay Chevrolet on the 215, home of the...
Woo!
Oh, the Vegas Golden Knights are back. I don't know if you needed me to tell you that, but the Vegas Golden Knights are absolutely unequivocally 100% back. 7 out of 8 points on a four-game road trip that included a back-to-back in St. Louis and Nashville, and then Winnipeg and Minnesota. The Golden Knights put the dagger in the Minnesota Wild on Saturday afternoon with a 2-1 victory in overtime to claim their 6th and 7th points on that road trip. Vegas 8-2-1 in their last 11 games, 5-0-1 in their last 6. Some might say, not Paul Bissonnette, but some might say that the Golden Knights have been pretty good in their last recent stretch. But I'll say this, the Vegas Golden Knights are back. 702-876-1340. We do this every single Monday. Unless the Golden Knights are playing on a Monday, then we do it on Tuesday or a Wednesday. Whenever the first show of the week is, we like to do a segment at the beginning of the hour, Ask the Insiders. It's your opportunity to call in and ask us any questions you might have pertaining to the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, I say the Golden Knights are back. I never believed that they went anywhere. I don't know that this is exactly flipping a switch. I don't know that this is exactly just deciding one day that things were going to be different. It felt more gradual to me, at least in looking at the process. But the Golden Knights are absolutely back, and they are going to be a problem for whoever they match up against in the first round. Defending Stanley Cup champions looking exactly like defending Stanley Cup champions. 702-876-1340. We have lines open right now, so if you've got a question, pick up the phone, call the number, and we're putting you on the air. It's Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman. Here we go. Let's go out to the phone lines, bring in Mike. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Hey, we said the other night after that great win against Minnesota the other day that Michael Amadio was just so cool on the post-game show. And that's the attitude, I think, that I wanted to spotlight at 4 o'clock today, is to just, first of all, talk about no matter what happens, good, bad, or indifferent, the attitude of the players and the coaching staff, although we did hear Coach Cassidy have a meltdown once this year. But it generally, for the players, is the same game in and game out. And that's the mark of a champion, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think we talked about it, Mike. It's championship metal. It's understanding that you're going to have pockets in a season or even pockets in a game where you're going to have to deal with adversity. And you can't get too high or too low. You can't let it get you out of your rhythm. You just have to trust and believe in your system, in your process, in the way that you've got to play, and believe that you have the talent in the room and the ability to win. And this team does. Nothing rattles them. Nothing shakes them.
No matter what. And that road trip could have lesser teams, lesser players. That road trip could have been daunting, but it wasn't at all. I want to ask this question for you and Chris, and that would be, judging by what's happened recently, and I mean very recently, you had the Hague major that got called back rightfully, and you had obviously the major on Saturday afternoon by Eichel that wasn't called back and maybe should have been. But nonetheless, were the guys pulled aside at any point by themselves or by the coaching staff and said, you're not playing hard enough, you're not playing gritty enough, let's step it up a notch? Do you think that happened?
I don't view either one of those plays as being grittier or anything like that. I think for Nick Hague, he's 6'6", and he's got a player that he's trying to squeeze off, and that player leans in, and it's an unfortunate situation. But I don't view that as Nick Hague changing his game or doing anything different. And as far as Jack Eichel goes, I think he was frustrated that he got cross-checked and it wasn't called. And, you know, there's an aspect of that to it. But, you know, I think if Jack wants to be grittier, it's more about checking through the hands and being hard to play against and forechecking well and reloading in the neutral zone well. I think it's more about that than anything else. So I don't get the sense that that's the case. I think that these are just two instances that happen in back-to-back games that, you know, one was called back to a 2-minute minor as it should have been. And the other one, I think because the refs called it a spear initially, they kind of painted themselves into a corner there. And that's kind of all I got on that.
Okay. Well, I was looking at two of the better goalies in the West this morning, and I looked at Jake Ottinger and Logan Thompson. And I said to myself, well, I wonder how close they are in age. Well, they're pretty close in age. And certainly Logan makes a lot less money at this point. But which one would you rather have at this moment or going forward?
I mean, Mike, that's a really interesting question, and thanks for the call. I'm taking Logan Thompson. He's the second star of the week in the National Hockey League right now. He's found his game. He's got five starts in a row now where he's allowed exactly one goal in each of those five starts. Like, I don't know how you're not taking Logan Thompson right now, Chapman.
Yeah, I'm not going to really dive too much into that, but I want, you know, because I like that Mike brought up Michael Amadio, and I've been kind of banging his drum for a while. You know, here's something about Michael Amadio that as I watch him play has kind of gone out of my mind or into my mind. He's probably played so well that he's played himself out of Vegas. Because he's a UFA, and he's only making $762,000 a year. This is a guy who scored 16 goals last year, had some key goals in the playoffs, and he's got, I believe, 13 goals this year. So, look, he's a guy who is going to get a very substantial raise. And I'm not saying that the Golden Knights won't re-sign him, but I don't know where he falls in the pecking order of what their priorities are. And he's a guy who probably might slip under the radar and sign somewhere else for a big chunk of change. Now, I don't know Mike personally. I don't know what his, you know, ambitions are. I'm sure the guy wants to get paid. He's a Stanley Cup champ. He probably wants to make a lot of money right now. So cash in. And, like, the guy's got almost 30 goals in the last two seasons. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, it's hard to score goals in the NHL. Michael Amadio has stepped up defensively as well. So he's a guy who is in line to get a substantial raise in the offseason.
Now, the only thing that I'll say kind of to push back on that is do not discount fit, right? He has been a player that prior to Vegas never really gained traction at the National Hockey League level. He has found something with Bruce Cassidy. He's found something with this team. So who knows what that motivator might be, but this has been a really good landing spot for Mike Amadio. We'll see kind of how those chips fall. 702-876-1340. We do have a line open. Let's go back out to the phone lines, bring in Sal. Hey, Sal, how you doing? Okay, no Sal. Let's go back to the phone lines, bring in Pat. Maybe we'll have more luck with Pat. Pat, are you there?
Hey, yes, I'm here.
Awesome. What do you got for us?
All right, so I just got to say, after this past week or this away trip, basically, we don't have to look back anymore. We can look forward. My big question now that we can start looking forward, when do we expect Hurdle to join the lineup?
Yeah, Tomas Hurdle skated today for the first time with the team in a red non-contact jersey. You know, I would expect, and Bruce Cassidy ruled him out of playing tomorrow against the Vancouver Canucks. I would imagine that Hurdle will travel with the team on their upcoming 3-game road trip. That's just me reading into kind of the way things kind of progress for individual players. And my guess is that if he doesn't play this week, he's likely going to factor in for the Golden Knights next week, assuming that there are no setbacks.
Wow, that's pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was kind of the targeted date, or at least the targeted expectation for Tomas Hurdle when he initially went down with the San Jose Sharks. The plan was always to get him in at the end, you know, in the regular season. And it's important in this context for the Golden Knights to get him into a couple of games, at least a handful of games, because you're trying to figure out where his fit's going to be going into the most intense hockey you're going to play in the playoffs. So to me, I'm targeting or at least looking at next week for Tomas Hertl making his Vegas Golden Knights debut.
All righty, sounds good. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for the call, Pat. 702-876-1340. Sal, if you're listening, pick up the phone. Give us a call back. We do have lines open right now. It's Ask the Insiders. Any questions you have surrounding the Vegas Golden Knights, pick up the phone. Give us a call. We are more than happy to answer your questions. Let's go back out to the phone lines. Bring in Stephanie. Hey, Stephanie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm good.
So, man, it was so nice to see four games in a row, LT and defense, keeping the other team off the board. Can't ask for much more than that. I just hope that they can keep that, keep it going, keep building. Getting Hertl is going to be pretty amazing. I know that there's a lot of cap circumventionologists talking about, I don't know, but I can't seem to find anybody explaining how it's circumventing the cap when he's coming back before the end of the regular season. You guys, any ideas on that?
It's just being mad for the sake of being mad. Like, honestly, we've talked about, you know, what are you to do if you're the Vegas Golden Knights, right? You have a team that is right in the middle of a competitive Stanley Cup window. They just won the Stanley Cup last year. You lose your captain, Mark Stone, with a pretty unprecedented injury in a lacerated spleen. And then you're just supposed to sit there and not try to make your team better, not try to improve your chances to make the playoffs, not try to replace that, not knowing when Mark Stone may or may not be available for you. Like, to me, if you're a team in that scenario and you're not actively trying to make your team better, I don't know what you're doing. Truly.
Big props to Bill Foley. He's willing to spend whatever he needs to spend to bring us a winning product and a winning team, and like, I'll forever be grateful for that. One other question, because one of the reporters for the Minnesota Wild had made a comment about Ryan Hartman getting a hearing and that it could mean he might get less than the mandated 3-game suspension. Do you think that would have even been possible with his history? Like, crazy.
Yeah, no, I don't. I didn't see a scenario in which Ryan Hartman wasn't going to get 3 games. I really didn't. Again, when you factor in his history as a repeat offender, when you factor in, you know, simply how ridiculous it is to walk back from the tunnel to the bench to throw your stick in the direction of players and a referee. To me, 3 games is exactly what he deserves. And, you know, I don't know why you would think that that would be reduced given what Ryan Hartman did.
And I mean, on top of that, it's pretty clear he was not only threw the stick, but he was bad-mouthing the officials. So it wasn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
There couldn't have been any, like, I accidentally threw my stick. Like, it was pretty clear why the stick was thrown.
Yeah, you're right on the money, Stephanie. Thanks for the call. You know, it's a bad look, just generally speaking. But again, for Ryan Hartman, it's just kind of something that is a part of his game. And, you know, right or wrong, he's recognized that this suspension is probably warranted in this scenario. And listen, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. If I were Ryan Hartman or I was the Minnesota Wild, I'd be frustrated with the way that game ended too. Essentially conceding the second point of the game because you pull your goaltender in overtime, but you weren't willing to do it in regulation so as to block the Golden Knights from getting a point. Like, to me, that didn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. And in a lot of ways, I think that led to the frustration as well. All right, let's go back out of the phone lines, bring in Rick. Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Doing well, guys. How about yourselves?
No complaints.
Oh, fantastic.
I was just wondering, how does Pavel Dorofeev not get on the playoff roster? I mean, you cannot sit that guy down with the way his touch is around the net and everything. The only thing I wonder about is he's not as heavy on the puck as someone who would be taking his position. How do you guys feel?
Well, I think
yeah, at this point, I don't think Pavel Dorofeev is going to get separated from William Karlsson and Anthony Mantha. I think that is a line moving forward for the Golden Knights. I, you know, unless you're starting to talk about Mark Stone's health or something like that, where you're trying to figure out different forward combinations. I think right now, as it stands, Hurdle, when he's ready, goes into your second line, and I don't think you touch the third line. I don't think you touch Dorofiev, Carlson, and Manta. That's my my perception out there.
Yeah, I agree with that also. And I read that 75 days is the average for a lacerated spleen. How far is Stone into his?
Oh, I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, I believe the injury took place February 22nd. That doesn't sound correct to me. Honestly, I'll have to go back and see. Now, that being said, I think as far as trying to understand timelines, Kelly McCrimmon was pretty honest in talking about, Mark Stone and his recovery, that it's variable depending on the person.
It was February 20th.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was 75 days for a non-athlete. So being an elite athlete, you would, assume a little bit quicker, but.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you guys see him being back for the playoffs at any time?
Rick, Bruce Cassidy kind of mentioned earlier today, Mark's not on the ice, he's not skating, and I don't profess to know how long of a buildup or a runway he's going to need in terms of skating before he's actually able to play in a game. Considering the fact that the playoffs start in just about 19 days, I think if you were expecting Mark Stone to be back in the first round of the playoffs, that you'd probably want him on the ice sooner than later. But simply, I don't know. I really don't. It's a crapshoot at this point as to whether or not he's going to be healthy and available. And the fact of the matter is, you have to make sure everything's healed up 100%. It's all dependent on the medical staff, the medical team, as to when he can resume activity in that regard. And right now, there's just too much unknown to really handicap it.
Well, hey, guys, thanks for the answer, and you guys always entertain us.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, appreciate it, Rick. So thanks so much for the calls.
Hypothetically, if it was 75 mm-hmm. days, we're looking at February 20th. There were 9 days remaining in February when that happened. We've gone through 31 days in March, so that's 40 days. Mm-hmm. Today would be day 41. We're still looking at least a month, assuming it was 75 days. And I don't know if a spleen for an athlete heals faster than, if I was to lacerate my spleen. But the other aspect of it is, he can't do any physical activity until it's completely healed. So that means he won't even be able to start getting back in shape until it's completely healed. And that aspect, yeah, he would get in shape a lot quicker than I would, but, it's still going to be a lengthy process. I don't know when he's going to be back, but, I would assume that you're not going to have him at least for the remainder of the season. Well, we know we're not going to see him for the remainder of the season. And
sure.
at least multiple games in the playoffs at the earliest, if we're lucky.
Well, it's all kind of dependent on his individual recovery time. And that's the thing. We don't know what that looks like. Right. And that's an aspect of this that I think is, the hardest part to figure out is, if you're talking about a knee injury or a shoulder injury or something like that, right. Because you've had players
come back from that
before.
Injury. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You've had timelines that are well established that you can set your watch to more or less when it comes to athletes. And this is just something that's new. It's different. It's a scenario we haven't dealt with yet. So we'll kind of see how things go. But yeah, I don't expect to see Mark Stone in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And, beyond that, time will tell.
Yeah.
702. Go ahead.
Touch on what Stephanie brought up about the outside noise. Who cares? Who cares what fans of other teams have to say? And I'll say this. Look, if Jakob Trenin doesn't hit Mark Stone to the point where Mark Stone lacerates his spleen, the Golden Knights are cash-strapped at the deadline. They have to get a lot more creative. So the only reason that they were even able to make moves was because Stone got hurt. And again, there's a process that the league has to sign off on. They have to check Mark Stone and make sure that the Golden Knights aren't doing anything fraudulent, because again, that would be something that the league is aware of. Like, there's so much nonsense that's gone on. Like, I just laugh now, and I don't know why fans here get so bent out of shape with loser fan bases are crying about.
Because it's not just that. It's messaging coming from people, individuals.
No, I get that. That are Ryan Whitney, broadcasting, crybaby.
That are broadcasting on flagship NHL broadcasts.
And like, the league should be cracking down on that, because what they're doing is basically saying that the league is allowing a team to cheat, which is ridiculous. It's asinine. Gary Bettman doesn't like Vegas any more than he likes Montreal or any more than he likes Edmonton. You don't think Gary Bettman wants the biggest star in the game? He wouldn't be thrilled if the biggest star in the game won a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, well, it's a bit. It is. Like, I'm fully convinced that, you know, if we're talking about biz here, and we are, it's a bit. He's doing this because he wants to be entertaining. He's doing this because he wants to drive the conversation surrounding Vegas and surrounding every other National Hockey League fan base that's going to be mad about it. But all you got to do is pull up Cap Friendly. All you've got to do is look at all the teams that are dealing with LTIR, and all you've got to do is recognize that everyone else is doing the same thing, and it's within the rules. It's been collectively bargained, and if you want to be mad about it, beat them in the playoffs. It's really not hard. But again, like, you know, it's fundamentally, I think it boils down to everyone wants to be mad about something. Even if they don't know why they're mad, they want to be mad about something. So the Golden Knights have provided an opportunity for fan bases that haven't won before, or it's been a long time since they have, to be upset and to be mad and to be angry about things that literally have nothing to do with the Vegas Golden Knights. It's frustration with their team's inability to think the same way and to chase championships the same way and to do everything that they can in order to win, because that, last I checked, was the objective for having a professional sports team. There are no participation awards here in the National Hockey League. You either win or you don't. This front office does everything that they can. This ownership group does everything that they can in order to make sure that they put together and give themselves the best opportunity to be a winner. There aren't necessarily teams out there like this front office, like this ownership group, and fans see it, they recognize it, and it's displaced frustration with their own front office and their own ownership and their own ideology to not do everything that they can do to win, and it's just taken out on the Golden Knights and their fan base. That's firmly what I believe, and, you know, as you mentioned, Chapman, it is what it is. Who cares? Who cares? Right?
Yeah.
When it comes down to it, play in the playoffs, whichever team wins, it is what it is. Who cares?
Yeah, I don't care what Paul Bissonnette has to say about this team. I mean, it's funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is, again, as you said, it is what it is. 702-876-1340. We're still going to do this for a couple more minutes. We've got a couple of lines open if you want to give us a call. 702-876-1340. Let's go out to the phone lines, bring in Rita. Hey, Rita, how you doing?
Oh, I'm good. How about you?
I'm fantastic.
Well, I want to know what you both think. I wasn't going to call, but the caller earlier talked about Gurfev, and he's doing remarkable. We can't take him out. I want to know who the hell felt when Hurdle goes in. I mean, they've kind of all got a synergy now, but Hurdle has to come in because of how he plays. But who comes out? Who do you guys think comes out?
So I think right now, if you're looking at what the lines were last game, right, your second line featured Paul Cotter, Chandler Stephenson, and Michael Amadio. My guess, considering what Bruce Cassidy said earlier today with Tomáš Hertl, that he expects Hertl to start on the wing. My expectation is that it would be a line of Hertl, Stephenson, Amadio, and Paul Cotter would be the odd man out. Just because I think that's the slot that makes the most sense for Tomáš Hertl. I don't think you're going to take, you know, Nick Waugh out of the equation on the fourth line. You're certainly not going to take Brett Howden out of the equation on the fourth line if Will Carrier is not healthy at that time too. So to me, it would be Barbashev, Eichel, and Marchessault. It would be Hertl, Stephenson, and Amadio. Dorofiev alongside Carlson and Mantha, and your fourth line would be Brett Howden, Nick Waugh, and Keegan Kolesar.
Yeah, but doesn't like the way Cotter fights brings a puck into the offensive zone? He's got a fight Dorofiev.
Yeah, he does, but he's not an established guy in the same way that Tomáš Hertl is. You know what I mean? Like, what other direction would you go there? Because if it's not Cotter, then it's likely Dorofiev.
We're losing a good player no matter what, right?
Yeah.
For a better player.
Well, it's a good problem to have.
Well, yeah, it is, but poor Cotter, but yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, Rita,
someone has to come out.
I look at it this way. If you are at the point where you have good players coming out of the lineup, that's not a bad thing. Like, it gets even more muddy when William Carrier comes back, because then
if
you have Carrier and Hertl, I don't know who the hell you take out of lineup, because I don't think you take Dorofeev out.
Well, again, it depends on what you're establishing with your lineup, right? Pavel Dorofeev has chemistry with William Carlson and Anthony Mantha. That line has been really good. I don't know that you're going to change that up. Now, for Dorofeev, he's had success in the regular season. Does that translate to the postseason? Time will tell. And if it doesn't, then you have the option of going to Paul Cotter. Then you have the option of Will Carrier whenever he's healthy. It's not a bad thing to have a lot of healthy, good, quality players. My expectation here is maybe you see Dorofeev and Cotter in and out with Carlson and Mantha in that situation. I think Michael Amadio is an everyday player until maybe you start to look at Mark Stone's health and his ability to play. But right now, if you're looking at who comes out in the immediate immediate moment to bring Tomáš Hertl in, my expectation is it's going to be one of Paul Cotter or Pavel Dorofeev.
Well, I would imagine Cotter. But Carrier has to come back in because we need that fourth to do what they do. And he drives that fourth line. More so than Howden.
I think that's kind of, you know, again, it's another question of trying to figure out the best way to do it. Brett Howden has been amazing for the Golden Knights, what, the last 7-8 games since returning from his own injury. Like, Brett Howden's been playing really well. It gives you another center iceman on your fourth line, so you have the ability to go with Brett Howden on draws or Nick Waugh on draws. It's a good problem to have, but, you know, again, if Carrier is healthy, the forecheck pressure that he brings to this team, the identity that he brings to this team, you would imagine that's going to be in the lineup. But again, Brett Howden's played well. It's really a difficult decision, Rita, and thanks so much for the call, for Bruce Cassidy to really establish, because A, we haven't seen Tomáš Hertl play yet. B, we don't know where the best fit's going to be, if it's going to be on the wing, down the middle, which players it's going to work best with. And three, we don't know how much experimentation Bruce is willing to do down the stretch. Are you going to have a game where Hertl gets to play alongside Jack Eichel just to see if there's something there? Are we going to get a game where some things are in flux, or you try different pairs to see if there's something better going into the postseason, something that makes you a deeper team? I think that all these different scenarios are on the table. However, I will say, when Tomáš Hertl is healthy, he's an everyday player for this team, and the objective, the final, you know, five or six games, whatever it ends up being for Hertl, the objective is to find out who he best matches with and how he best helps this team.
You know, I think, and the final thing I'll say on Rita's question is, it's much better to have the conversation and the debate about who comes out, as opposed to just being able to look at the roster and be like, oh, that's easy, that guy's out, that guy's out. Yep, that guy's an AHL player, he's out. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so much better to be in the situation where you have to really go back and forth about who comes out. I mean, the fact that the Golden Knights could go out there with the team that played against the Wild on Saturday, and look, they beat a team that was playing for their lives in their home arena and played like it, to be able to think that you're going to be able to get better than that in these final eight games, it's kind of a scary thing.
It is scary, but it's there.
It's reality. It's a reality.
The opportunity is right there in front of the Golden Knights to not only bring in additional players, but to improve on their rate of play over the last 11 games in which they've gone 8-2-1. And again, as you mentioned, 5-0-1 in their last six games. The Golden Knights have been playing phenomenal, phenomenal hockey. Take a break. Come back with more on the VGK Insider Show. It's the VGK Insider Show. Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman hanging out with you for the next 90 minutes or so. Darren Millard's going to join us in hour number two. We'll get into the game rating. A 2-1 victory in overtime for the Vegas Golden Knights over the Minnesota Wild, effectively ending Minnesota's playoff hopes in the process. Vegas firmly in third place now in the Pacific Division. And we'll see how high they can fly. Great stuff on Ask the Insiders. Phenomenal calls, as always. You know, Chapman, it's April Fool's Day. And
okay.
I don't know how you feel about April Fool's Day, like, in general. It's always interesting when companies will throw out something that's very clearly, very obviously meant to be a joke, and people will run with it, or they'll get convinced otherwise, not remembering or understanding what day it is. Do you have a greatest April Fool's joke of all time story? Like, was there one that got you really, really good?
Well, I got my father, my late father, really, really, really good once. So I had a key to his place, and at the time I was with my now ex-wife. And he asked me to come by and do something. I don't remember exactly what it was. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna prank my dad. And I left a handwritten note to my dad that said, "Dear Dad, went with name of my now ex-wife down to the courthouse to elope." And my cell phone must have, when he got home and he saw the note, my cell phone must have rang like 50 times. From my father, and every single time he left a message, "I can't believe you did this. I can't believe you went and eloped." He was so mad that I left the note, and finally I decided to let him in. "Hey, Dad, you know today is, right?" He's like, April. My dad had a good sense of humor, but it was a very dry sense of humor, and so sure. he wasn't one for pranks or jokes like that. I did something to him, another thing to him one time where I messed with his beer, and needless to say,
why did you do this to your dad?
Because, you know, my dad used to give me a hard time too, but like it wasn't in the same way. Like he didn't play pranks. My dad was just he would joke, like he would make sarcastic jokes a lot. But. I don't remember exactly what I did to his beer, and I had a case of beer in the trunk of the car because I knew he would be really mad. I don't remember exactly what I did, but needless to say, my father was a good sport once he realized that it was April Fool's Day. So that I got my mom one time too. I told her that. I called her up. She was still living in New Jersey at the time. I'm like, Mom, guess what? And she's like, what? I'm like, I got a job with the San Francisco 49ers. She's like, really? I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna be working in their media department, the 49ers. I'm like, this is the biggest thing that's ever happened to me. I'm going to work in the NFL. And she, of course, posted on Facebook, "Oh, Chris got a job with the 49ers, blah, blah, blah." And I had to call her back a couple hours later, like, Mom, guess what? I'm just kidding. April Fool's. didn't go over well with her, and I don't know why.
I hope you felt awful. You felt awful.
And the funny thing was, she had all these replies from all people that she grew up with in Brooklyn, like, "Oh, it's great, congratulations, Chris!" And the fact that she had to go back on Facebook and post that my son was playing a joke on me. He didn't actually get a job with the 49ers. And I don't know why I picked the 49ers. I just figured, you know. Very important franchise in NFL history, you know, Joe Montana, Steve Young. I guess it was kind of, looking back, it was kind of mean, but
it's all mean.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not an April 1st guy. Like, I'm not an April Fool's guy. I don't necessarily play pranks on people. It's just not something that that I do. But the fact that, like, you had to call your mom and be like, listen, this hyper successful thing that you think I did, I didn't actually do.
Yeah.
And the fact that people were leaving such nice messages and you had to bite the bullet and be the big jerk about it. Yeah. Like, I love that you got your comeuppance in that way. That's phenomenal. Great.
I let my mom take the fall for me on that one. She had to go back and by the way, bumped into Golden Pikes.
You made your mom go back and say, listen, Chris was joking with me.
I didn't.
You didn't even have the decency to go on Facebook and be like, guys,
because I'm a horrible son. I didn't tell her to go post it on Facebook.
She was proud of you.
No, she was proud of yeah, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I didn't tell her to go post it. You know,
what a terrible thing to do.
She did that on her own.
I'm finding out more and more information about you that I didn't need.
Listen, the first clue should have been that I didn't post anything on my Facebook.
No. When you're a mom or a dad in that scenario, you don't ask questions, Chapman. You just go. You just do.
I mean,
you react in the moment.
My parents were so. My mom's still here, fortunately, but my father was the same way as my mom. They were so in tune with what I would put on Facebook that if my father didn't agree with it, I literally was getting a phone call like 5 minutes later from him, like, "You sure about that? You sure about that, Chris? You sure you want to put that out there to the world?" Like, usually he was right. Usually my father was right. Wise man, that Harold Chapman. Sure. But
So just for the record, I'm never going to play an April Fool's joke on you. It's never going to happen. Never going to do it. Like, I'm not going to do the Connor Bedard thing where he says, yeah, I just don't want to play hockey anymore, which he did today. Or the Matt Rempe thing where it's, I'm not a hockey player. I'm just going to be a UFC fighter. Guys, if you read that, if you see it, it's April Fool's. There's no good April Fool's joke. I stand by that. That's my quote-unquote hot take for the day. But before we take a break and set up hour number two, I do want to get to a couple of questions that we got on the text line. We're going to start with Beth Ann. She says, I know this sounds dumb. First of all, there are no dumb questions. But what do you mean when you say plus minus of players? I'm always confused about it. And what's the difference between slashing and spearing? If you missed the game broadcast with Dan Duva and Gary Lawless, a great job in terms of definitions when it came to spearing. We'll get into that. Okay, so plus minus is even strength. If you are on the ice and a goal is scored, that's a minus. That's a dash. You have allowed a goal, even strength, when you were on the ice. If you score a goal, even strength, so 5-on-5, 4-on-4, then that becomes a plus on the ledger. So what it essentially kind of extrapolates over the course of the entire season is how many goals you were either on the ice for. If you're a plus player, it's more than what you were on the ice for goals against. If you're a minus player, that means that you were on the ice for more goals scored, even strength, than than you were able to score. So essentially, it is the goal differential at even strength when you are on the ice. Now, a couple of things can play into that. If you are just getting to the bench on a line change, but you don't actually step off the ice, then you get a minus. You might not have anything to do with the play, but it still counts against you as a minus. Same can kind of be said when you jump on the ice and a goal is scored. You didn't do anything, but you get the plus. Good on you. But more or less, at the end of the season, when it all comes down, if you are a minus player, that means you were on the ice for more goals scored against at even strength than you were on the ice for goals scored for. And then if you're a plus player, that means that you score more goals, generally speaking, when you're on the ice, than you allow at even strength and 5-on-5. So hopefully that helps and didn't confuse you more. Now, the difference between slashing and spearing, Dan Duva, again, Gary Lawless, again, did a phenomenal job here. Spearing essentially is when you thrust or poke a player with the blade of your stick. And the thrust is, or stab more or less, is really the key terminology that you're looking at there. Slashing is exactly what it sounds like. It is slashing a stick toward an opponent or using two hands, a chop on the leg, a chop on the arms. We all know what a slash looks like. But a spear is different in that it is a stab or a poke. And based on what the referees felt they saw in that moment, they thought that Jack Eichel's reaction and the play more closely resembled a stab or a poke than it did a whack or a slash or a hack of some kind. So that's kind of the best breakdown that I can give you there. Now, I do want to get to a couple of questions here that are pulling on the same thing, theme. Where will the Golden Knights be seated in the playoffs? Can they catch the Oilers? What can they do to possibly move up in the standings? It's really simple. Just keep winning games. Like, that's what the Golden Knights need to do. They've got a head-to-head matchup with the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow. They've got one more matchup head-to-head with the Edmonton Oilers before the end of the regular season. You look at the Oilers, they've got Colorado twice between now and the end of their season. So really what the Golden Knights have to do in order to catch Edmonton, in order to try to get home ice advantage, is you got 8 games left. If you can run the table, that gives you a really good opportunity to hopefully get home ice advantage. Now, could they win as a 3 seed? I believe so. But the fact of the matter is, if you're looking at this objectively, what do the Golden Knights need to do to apply pressure on Edmonton and Vancouver, the teams that they're chasing, the teams that are ahead of them? Just got to win, baby. You have anything to say on that, Chapman?
No, I mean, I think right now you kind of hope that Edmonton, who has a couple games in hand on you, that maybe they stub their toe a little bit, or maybe sure. That they catch the Vancouver Canucks and you catch the Canucks. I mean, I think, you know, the Canucks had struggled a bit lately. They won last night. They beat a really bad Anaheim team. But look, you've got 2 games against them. So that's a big swing that you could, some ground you can make up right there. And, you know, I don't know if you want to help Edmonton win the division, but I don't really think you care. I think for the Golden Knights, if you can sneak into that 2 seed and you get home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs, you never know what happens in that other series, and maybe the 4 beats the 1 and you end up getting home ice advantage in both series. I mean, a lot to play for still if you're Vegas with 8 games to go.
Yeah, and I think that the right way of looking at it is similar to what Pat said, and I said something similar on the postgame show. I think the Golden Knights have put themselves in a position where it's less about the teams that are chasing them and more about the teams that are in front of them. How high can the Golden Knights move up the standings? Can they get home ice advantage? I'm not ruling it out. I'm just not ruling it out. The way that they've played recently, understanding that the Oilers have a more compressed schedule that they're going to have to go through, and the Vancouver Canucks, there's been, I don't want to say regression in their game, but there's certainly been less continuity in their game. I'm not putting anything out of the realm of possibility for this Vegas Golden Knights team. So we'll see what ends up happening. But seeding can go anywhere. It really can. It's way too early, and I know it sounds ridiculous with only 8 games left, but it's too early to start worrying about where the Golden Knights are going to finish. Just know that they're going to finish above that playoff cut line. Take a break. Set up hour number 2 next on the VGK Insider Show. Fantastic final call there from Dan Duva as the Golden Knights defeat the Minnesota Wild 2-1, take 7 out of a possible 8 points on that 4-game road trip. They return home for 1 tomorrow against the Vancouver Canucks, and then it depart for a 3-game road trip before finishing the regular season at home inside T-Mobile Arena. And if you want to go to the Vegas Golden Knights and the Minnesota Wild on April 12th, be caller number 7. Caller number 7, you're a winner. 702-876-1340. You're seeing the Golden Knights and the Minnesota Wild. Hour number 2, Darren Millard. All that's coming up next on the VGK Insider Show.